Yeah. I'm right back at it with my brother Jay Dutch. Fresh new trash for the family, what the fuck? My man Big Derek, but we call him old school. About to get up on the mic and straight up act school. Ain't no fiction here, cause we only talking facts. If he's talking about the bucks, he don't cut him no slack. No need to waste time, and let's get right to it. What the fuck podcast, ain't nothing to it but to do it. Yeah. About to turn it over to my man old school with the What the Buck podcast. Check it, yo. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Old School, and we are live from Studio 76 with What the Buck. I want to welcome everyone to the chat room as you start filing in this evening. Also, we'll see our people on the podcast afterwards. We've been having a very lively Twitter exchange just recently with Thomas from the Tampa Bay Times, as well as Chris Fisher, formerly of Bucks Brief podcast fame and now BYOCB larger fame, because I think he pretty much owns Orlando. And then my man Pinnacle as well. Been a good time out there, which is quite a lot of fun, in my opinion. We've got a packed show for you tonight, to be honest. So we're going to talk a little bit about the tailgate, the first tailgate of the year, which was spectacular in about a billion ways, but we won't do a tremendous amount of that. I put an article out tonight about that that you can check out on whatthebuck.net. But it was very, very special in a number of ways. We'll talk about that. I want to thank our sponsors as well. And we got Luke Easterling calling in at 9:15. He's always good because he actually understands the game. So we'll have him talk about the game as well. We'll ask him some questions that seem mildly introspective. And we'll talk about looking backwards a little bit about what the Bucks' win over the Bears actually meant, if it meant anything. Then we will turn our guns towards the Minnesota Vikings and talk about that game. And then wrap things up with some projections, predictions, pontification, etc. So as you continue to file in, I want to make sure we start out, as we always do, by thanking our sponsors, Steps Towing, Pepin Distributing, Tito's Vodka, Don Q Rum, Steakhouse Elite. These guys absolutely stepped up to the plate this week with our first tailgate. And every tailgate, as you know, with us, we do what's called tailgating with a purpose. All of our tailgate net proceeds are then given to a charity. We have named charities every week. We distribute our flyer. This was our first tailgate of the year. We had some new friends coming to our tailgate this year. You guys know that we talked about it on the Bucks Uncensored podcast, as well as this podcast with Justin Pulowski. We had the Buckaholics here, represented by Keith Larson. We've talked to a number of the fan groups across the country, including the Buccaneers Invasion Group out of Atlanta. One of the things we've noticed here is fans getting together. The Buccaneers have some excitement. They got some juice, as Coach Gruden used to call it, with both the talent and what the talent seems to be doing, the maturation, the coaching, all these things are coming together. So you've got this groundswell of support. You had the evolution of the Buccaholics last year. Buccaneers Invasion has been around forever in different forms, ATL Bucks before that. And then with John Superfan Blakely taking over with the rebranding to Buccaneers Invasion, and then Justin Pulowski and the Stick Carriers coming out of Bucks Uncensored, we had this huge blossom of support. And listen, we said it before, we don't really care where you come from, how long you've been here, what you're doing. If you're a good fan, you got a home with us. So we had our first tailgate. We had this little hurricane thing called Irma, which, by the way, and I've already said this a couple times, but I'll say it on this podcast too, for all you guys who are sitting either, especially if you're sitting in Tampa talking shit about people not being at the game, but those of you who are outside of Tampa talking about who was not at the game, I've been to, I think, every home game since I had season tickets, which is, I guess, 2005, when I got back from Washington State. And I was as proud of that crowd as I've been of a crowd in a long time. They were there. They were loud. They were energetic. You see some empty seats, you get all mad, and that usually shows you don't understand how the stadium is laid out, and there's tons of people down in the end zones. Not to mention, we just came off of a just absolutely soul-crushing hurricane. So all of you can go pound sand talking shit about the crowd in Tampa. If you were here and you were talking shit about it, buy a ticket and get into the game. If you weren't here, then come down. We have people that travel all the time. But other than that, how about you just keep our names out your mouths for a little while? You know that I will make fun of these crowds if they're doing crappy things, if they're sitting on their hands. Do I think it's cool when people leave before the game is over? No. But the people around me had just gotten power back 4 hours before the game. They had to go see what food was left in their fridge. There are extenuating circumstances. Anyway, by the way, if you haven't picked up on it yet, I am in a great mood tonight. I am absolutely amped. I have no idea why. I should be exhausted. I think it was the 45 minutes of boy band title jokes that were going on during the interim time before this podcast. At any rate, I was talking about the tailgate. We had all those folks come together. We lost our pirate ship. Now, there's a whole story behind this, and I'll tell you the story. The great folks at Crew of Blackbeard's Revenge, we've been getting the ship from for years, had an offer they couldn't refuse. They're a charity as well. Their money's go to charity. They've got to do what's best for them. Totally understood it. For years, I made fun of the Buccaneers for having the second largest pirate ship in Tampa Bay on game day. They got the largest one now. So we lost our ship, but in this moment of incredible serendipitous joy, we noticed that we had tried to go procure another ship, but to get the ship onto our lot, there used to be a sort of driveway on the west side of the lot, which had been dug up by the city of Tampa and a power pole put there. So even if we had gotten another ship or had the ship we had before, we would no longer have a way to get a pirate ship onto the lot. Now, we loved having the thematics of the ship. We changed things up. We had a stage. We had a different sound system. We had everything a little bit different. We had more people. We thought we'd have more people, and we did. And I thought it worked out really well. We're going to continue to improve and tweak that model as we go through the year. We're going to make sure that we improve on every aspect. Matt and Ryan and Jay and Aaron and Christine and Jackie and the whole What the Buck crew, guys. There's a whole crew behind that tailgate who just busted their asses to make that happen. And a big shout out to all those guys. To let you guys know, one other little thing. This whole season for tailgating is sort of in memory of Richard Zeller, our crewmate who passed away this offseason. So if you see stuck patches, that's who we're talking about. So we'll have a banner out there as well. We're certainly thinking about him as his children and family are with us all year long. A couple little pieces of data that some were in the article and some were not. We had about a 40% increase in the first tailgate from last year. That shows some of the excitement that I think we've got going on here in Tampa Bay. So if you didn't get out to the tailgate this week, make sure you get your ass out there for the Giants tailgate. It's a late game, which means we'll have an extended tailgate. We've learned from the first one about the walk, which, by the way, I saw some people talking shit on Twitter. There's a lot of salt on Twitter right now that I don't understand. Talking shit about not being able to hear stick carriers, not being able to hear people in stands, not being able to hear this, that, and the other, or where was the walk. It is a non-trivial thing to orchestrate that sort of thing. And if you've seen the videos since, that walk happened, and it was pretty impressive. I could hear them as I ran to catch up with them and go on the east side of the stadium. It takes time to make that whole thing come together. We're working with security. We're working with a large group of people. A large group of people that take a lot of pictures, right? We got a lot of face painters in this crowd. They're out there taking pictures of the fans. It's going to just continue to get better. But I got to say, as a fan, I don't know that I've been as proud as I was of everything leading up to and then through the beginning of execution and during the game, all the way through the game, even trying to hold up on the shutout. It looks like the net on the tailgate will be over $2,000 for one voice, which is great. But beyond that, we ended up with six trucks and over $1,500 in gift cards that went to Fort Meade, Florida. And the reason it went there is because Cheryl Stewart, who's the founder and chief exec or chief operating officer, whatever the hell's executive director, that's the title, of What the Buck Really Matters, our charitable foundation, she's been in housing forever. She knew where the FEMA support was going. And that's great. They got the support. But these folks over in Fort Meade did not have the support. It wasn't going to come there anytime soon. And they were also have a very low rate of insurance. So our trucks went over there, brought all that food and supplies and cards and did a great job. And that's because of your donations and what you guys did and what Houston did, redirecting what we had collected from them back to us. So when you think about it, what we did on Sunday was we got out there, we set up an amazing tailgate, the only Hall of Fame tailgate in Tampa Bay. If you haven't seen the drone footage, go take a look at that. That was done at the very beginning, which is why you don't see a lot of people. But you saw the pictures later with the rest of the crowd. That was pretty impressive. We marched to the stadium. Justin led the walk to the stadium, made noise all through the game, got an ass-kicking win, and did a lot of good for a lot of people. I don't know that you get much better than that. So I got to say it was very exciting, and I am super stoked about the whole thing. So we're going to continue to improve and enhance on that, and we're going to talk tonight. And as you guys are listening to the podcast tonight, whether you're listening real-time in the chat room or whether you're listening to on the podcast afterwards, tonight is our combined show. So we're going to do a look back with Chicago. So we'll review sort of what I said or what you guys said, if you were on the show, if our guests have done things with regards to predictive MVPs, who we thought would do well, what we thought went well, and what we think will project into the Vikings game. We'll do our skulls and swords. Skulls and swords are our MVP and bonehead of the game. The good one is the sword, right? The good one is the sword. So just keep that in mind. So, and I see my man AR6423 in there, who knows the Polk County area. And listen, I came from Auburndale. I lived a long time in Lakeland as well. We definitely know how bad Polk County got hit. A lot of our folks were over there. So good stuff. Glad you like the Periscope, Callum. I've got the extended battery, so that's something you should see at every game. You'll see in-game stuff, tailgate stuff. You'll also see the immediate wrap-up, and I'll try and get those pulled out and put into YouTube and then thrown in as sort of, I guess what PewterCast calls his is Instant Cast. It's a good name. I don't know if that's a real name or not, but we'll try and get those ramped over there as rapidly as possible. So before Luke calls in, Luke will be in at about 9:15. I want to talk about something Coach Cutter said that I think is really important. He said it in the locker room after the game, and we've said this on the podcast for a long time. It's coach speak. It's player speak. It's been around for forever and a day. An entire season is made up of individual games. And when he said that, he said it's not 15 more games. It's one more. So when you think about what we say tonight, the things that we'll talk about the team, the things we're looking for out of the team, the things we saw last week, all of this just has to go for the next game, right? The next game is the important one. You can't predict beyond that. So what this team has to do is realize, okay, it got a good, you know, resounding win against a Chicago Bears team that was, let's just say, damaged a little bit with some injury issues, you know. But that was a team that did fairly well against a pretty good squad the week before. And the reality is you can only play the people who were put in front of you. This week, we're going to face a Minnesota Vikings team that may be down their starting quarterback, but has Dalvin Cook, which will, of course, provide all the drama in the world, because like any time, there's going to be people that want certain people drafted. And I know there's a lot of folks here, some really good folks who are regular listeners to the show, who I know and I hang out with at the tailgate, that were absolutely in the Dalvin Cook camp. They believe that our running backs are not good enough and that Dalvin Cook would have been good. Dalvin Cook has come out and played very well. And we'll talk a lot about that because Dalvin Cook, you know, is writ large on the future of the Minnesota Vikings, at least until Sam Bradford comes back at whatever point. So, Brandon, glad to have you over there. I'm glad you're in the live stream. But as we talk about those things, we got to look at what the Bucs did really, really well this week. And that was, and I harped on it, I think I live tweeted this week more than I have in a long time, discipline. When it comes to defense, you can look for splash, you can look for flash, you can look for all these things, but the reality is defense always starts with discipline, being where you're supposed to be. Because if you're where you're supposed to be, then the system can work. Now, when you look at a team like this, we talked about Chicago last week, their runners were incredibly patient. That is a rarity in today's NFL. What you see is guys trying to out-athlete others. And when you get to the NFL, it's hard to out-athlete them because they're all superior athletes. Even the guys you guys call fat. You don't want to get in a foot race with them, I promise you. So when you look at what the Bears had done and what Cohen had done and what Howard had done and what we said going into that game, when you look at the keys to the game for last week, the big things that we said we had to do was we had to victimize the Bears linebackers in coverage, which I think we did a fair amount of. We had to disrupt Glennon to trigger turnovers, which we did. And then we had to wrap. All of the discussion we had was around making sure that they were where they needed to be. And when they did make the tackle, when they did make contact, they made a tackle. And I think that Callum just said that in the chat room as well. I don't know that I've seen a better display of open field tackling since the heyday of this defense. Now, that's one game. One game. You got to go out there and do it again. And that's not a slight. That's not to say that we don't get to take credit for that win. You do. We did it last week. That one's in the books. You don't get to break your arm patting yourself on the back. Remember when we beat the Falcons soundly in the first game? You have to stack wins. You can't just get them occasionally. And to Jason in the chat room, De La Torre, JC De La Torre, absolutely, gap integrity. This comes back to discipline. Be where you're supposed to be. Do your job. Now, we're fortunate here in Tampa Bay, despite what folks have said for a number of years, to have a guy like Gerald McCoy, who graded out tremendously on PFF's scores this week, as he often does. He disrupts plays so often, and Coach Cutter talked about it all through training camp. He's in so fast. Sometimes the plays we end up seeing are not the plays as they were designed by the offense that we're facing. Cash wants to ask if it's too soon to say Beckwith is special. Listen, I've been blowing the Beckwith horn for a while. This kid is super fast. He seems to have really, really good instincts. But again, he's got to get a resume put together, right? And I don't think it's too soon to say he looks special, because he does look special, but you don't get to be, you know, the guy that we talk about until you've done it for quite a while. And that's why I've been so staunchly in the Levante David camp, because this is a guy who has, I know, blow the horn. I knew someone was going to catch that. Damn it. I hate it when I do that. But Levante David just keeps doing it day in and day out. Quan Alexander had a great game, got injured, says he's okay. You know, we'll talk a little bit about the injury report. This linebacking crew, by the way, we still haven't seen Devontae Bond, who played well enough that he got mentioned with Beckwith in training camp and in preseason. Guys, this is an area that was not deep before, and it looks really deep now. Rick H. says to stop blowing Beckwith. I don't think anyone's blowing him, but we can talk about that later, even with your tough guy talk. Good evening. Is this Mr. Easterling?
It is.
Well, good, because otherwise we're screwed. Welcome to the show, Luke. Yeah. How are you doing tonight, man?
No. I was actually trying to order a pizza. Who am I talking to?
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, that's one thing that I don't have in the house, but I could probably get you some barbecue, and I definitely could get you some booze because I'm in the poker room. So,
I really need to, we need to do this live at some point. I got to come over there and I got to see what's going on. But
you are always welcome. Even when we're not doing a show, you can always come over. The booze is still here. I've offered it to a number of people and everyone acts like I live in, Tuscaloosa. So it's just Brandon, but I'd love to have you out. Seriously.
I grew up in Brandon. That's not that far.
No. And what's funny is Fisher, my man, BYOCB Chris, he's from Lakeland. He used to come over here all the time, but we got guys who live in Tampa who are afraid to come out. But that's okay. Well, we'll set it up. I talked to our boy Rick Brown today, too. We were talking on Twitter, and he said he may come out, too. So maybe we'll do a roundtable. Those are always fun.
You get Flick and Chris, and let's do it all.
I love it. So we got Luke Easterling on the phone. You guys know him. You guys love him. You've gotten a chance to see, just like we did, one instance of the wonderful Buccaneers this year. Everyone's excited. Everyone's elated. We got the shiny penny feel. What's your take? You tend to be a little bit more pragmatic.
It's that game is an example of the Bucs establishing that you do to a team like the Bears. You do that to a team like that to establish a starting point. You say, you look at the Bears on paper. You look at all the issues they have. The injuries and what's going on at quarterback and just a lack of talent really at a lot of positions. Then you see the Bucs with all this hype and all this, positive, press going into the season, all these reasons to be excited. You hope that it comes together on Sunday and looks like it did last week. Sure, you have a few, bumps and bruises here and there. You show some growing pains because it's your first regular season game. But for the most part, you saw a team in Tampa Bay who's on the cusp of being that playoff team against a team that is still rebuilding and still has a lot of problems. And that translates to almost a shutout and a 29-7, butt kicking. So I think what it did was say, listen, this team, I think, is really where we think we are. But it didn't tell us a whole lot about where this team can go. I think we'll start to learn that this week. You go on the road against a team in Minnesota who has looked up and down, but they always play well at home. Yeah. How is this team going to respond mentally to going into a tough environment and playing a much better team? I think we're going to learn a lot about how far the Bucs can go this week.
Well, that's a great point, looking back. And thanks to the guys in the chat room for helping. I adjusted your volume down a little bit because we were clipping, but I apparently went too low. We got you back up here, and I think they heard you fine. It does show us where they are, but it doesn't show us where they can be, which is your point. And to that end, what you did see of what they are now, what was your biggest surprise on offense and what was your biggest surprise on defense?
I think one of the most pleasant surprises was it took a while to see a penalty. I think that's something that the Bucs have always struggled up and down, no matter who's the coach, no matter what's going on, penalties seem to be something this team always struggles with, regardless of what side of the ball we're on. So I think that was encouraging to see. I think, spreading the ball around and getting different receivers involved. The big thing for me is turnovers. This team on defense, you have a scheme that's creative enough to put players in position to fool offenses and force them into mistakes. You have the athletes and the talent to take advantage of those mistakes. And again, you can say it all off season. You can see it on paper. You can see the players and the scheme and think that it's going to come together. But to see the Bucs actually make that happen on the field and create some big plays and stop a long drive early in the game where it looked like the Bears were going to, keep it a game early on, and to continue to make those plays when they needed to, if they can continue to eliminate the mistakes on both sides of the ball as far as penalties go and to take advantage and take the ball away like the great Bucks teams used to, they have the talent to be able to do that. It's just got to come together. It did on Sunday, and if they can keep that up and continue to progress, I think it's going to be a really, really good year.
Now, with any team, a lot of this comes down to health, and we've had some noise around here. Apparently, Jacquizz Rodgers was playing with the flu. The flu is sweeping the building. You've been covering football a long time. Have you seen this before? I know you're not a medical doctor, nor do you play one on television, but what's your take on the health or the infirmary status of the Buccaneers right now?
I tell you what, man, the only thing that freaks me out is as long as we don't have another MRSA situation, I think everything else. I mean, I'm not a doctor, and I don't know, you know, how things are going in the building and what you do to kind of combat that as a team, as a medical staff. But, you know, if you got a bunch of guys under the weather, you're trying to make a road trip, you're going up north, and things are going to be a bit different. It's definitely going to be a challenge for the team. So hopefully it's, you know, they can contain it. And again, I'm not anyone to speak expertly on the medical side of things, but hopefully they can keep it in check. Hopefully the guys can, you know, it won't be too much of an issue for them. But again, as long as we don't end up with guys, you know, with severe life-threatening infections, hopefully we'll be all right.
Absolutely. And what's interesting, we can probably sidebar on that afterwards, because I know that you don't have all night to be on here, but we can talk a little bit about MRSA later. That was such an odd event and a rarity in many ways. I don't think it's something we should perseverate over. And I know that allegedly the folks who, and I hate saying the word responsible for that, but the folks who would have been responsible for avoiding the problem are no longer even in the building. So it's probably not something to concern about. I'm always amazed when the flu hits, because the flu to me is one of those things where, listen, we got access to hydration, all that stuff. Let's just hydrate these guys and keep them well. But it is what it is. We're not going to go back to MRSA and Togate, as Jose Sanchez in the chat room just said. The hell with that. Now, Mr. McClain, our new nickel, showed up. We'd seen him talking, doing all the right stuff. He's promoted to starter. He gets a pick six. What else did you see on the field from him? Because he graded out poorly other than that play. But what are your thoughts about him specifically and the secondary? Because a lot of folks say, hey, they got eaten up by Mike Glennon, who threw for 300 yards in a crushing loss.
You know, the secondary is always going to be, to a certain extent, a product of the pass rush. And I saw a team that you mentioned McClain making a splash play, but then for the rest of the game, you know, may have had some struggles and showed some growing pains getting used to the system there. But it was kind of the same thing for the pass rush. We did see a couple of big plays. Noah Spence made a nice one, obviously, to force the turnover. But by and large, especially on some of those third down and long, you know, Glennon had a clean pocket. He had time to make throws. And when you do that, you know, Glennon's not a world beater by any stretch of the imagination. But if you give him that clean pocket, give him time to throw, any secondary is going to break down after a few seconds of trying to, you know, hang with receivers down the field. So I think the Bucs just aren't strong enough in defensive backfield. They have some talent. They have some athletes. But the overall unit does still need enough, you know, improvement and development in that scheme, even in the second year now, to where if you're going to give any quarterback, you know, 4 seconds to throw the ball, it's going to be difficult on them. So I think you're just continuing to see each week we're going to see this team getting better and better. We saw it last year down the stretch, particularly from the secondary guys like Keith Tandy making big plays. I think it will continue to improve like we saw last year, but it just shows that there are so many ways to improve even after a 29-7 win.
Well, and it's one of those things where I think this is what happens after a 29-7 win. What I saw was, you know, a lot of fans seeming very unhappy with the 29-7 win and tearing apart individual pieces of the performance. And I'm not saying you give them a pass, right? Because I'm a pain in the ass too, and I'll call out quickly when I think something looks like shit. But at the same time, let's not get crazy. If they throw for 600 yards and still score 7 points and we score 29, I don't care, right? There's no column for that as long as you get the win. So it's interesting to me to see the fixation on the individual stats. But
it's fun. We have a family Facebook group with my, you know, all my siblings, my parents, and everybody, and we're always chatting on game day and talking through the game. And that's kind of our conclusion was at the end, was that if we were pitching a fit about not getting a shutout or nitpicking some of those, you know, particular things that we liked, that we didn't like about the performance, and we're talking about a 29-7 win, I'll take if those are our biggest complaints of the day, it's a far cry from the Bucs football that we've seen over the last few years.
Absolutely. Now, another area that's come under some fire, despite some sort of conflicting data, is the pressure. And you alluded to it a second ago, right? You said you saw some highs. Jerem McCoy graded out well. That being said, they didn't get Glennon on his back very often. What's your takeaway of this defense? And I don't want to limit you to just the front four, right? The defense's ability to bring pressure when it needs to, and how do you think that's going to play out against Minnesota?
I think that it's going to be interesting to see, because the Bucks had this game in hand for a good bit of it. So I wonder if the tables were turned, or maybe, you know, we're in a closer game throughout four quarters, if you would have seen more creativity, you know, more aggressiveness from Mike Smith in terms of the play calling, in terms of the blitzes in the second half particularly. You saw some fantastic run blitzes in particular. Lavonte David made a couple of big plays as a run blitzer. So, I mean, that may be something different. But I do wonder if it's in a situation where the Bucks need a big stop on third down, or, you know, in later in the game where the game is still in the balance, if we're going to see Mike Smith pull out some more stops and get more creative that way.
You know, I think schematically, we talked about this in the offseason. There was the discussion about the implementation of the 3-4. We saw a couple of instances where they ran it this week. Mike Smith said in the press conferences during training camp, listen, we haven't even installed all of our packages. We won't have everything installed till probably game 8. So this is one of those things, and we talked about this as one of the important aspects. This is now a more mature defense. And so the ability for Mike Smith to dial up different things and be more sort of eccentric with what he chooses to do allows them to do things like set plays up, right? Let's say you're not playing tight man and they're going to the same routes. Good coordinators take advantage of that by baiting quarterbacks. This is a chess game. It is not checkers. Now, draft is an area that you have tremendous knowledge in, and I am just absolutely shitty in. There's a lot of discussion here in Tampa about Dalvin Cook, obviously with the local ties, with the issue with the running back position that some feel is incredible, some feel is terrible. What was your thought of Dalvin Cook coming out? What was your thought of the Bucks not selecting Dalvin Cook? And what do you think we're going to see out of Dalvin Cook this week in Minnesota?
Well, I mean, these might sound like conflicting statements, but Dalvin Cook was the number one running back in this class for me. Even in what I consider to be a historic class in terms of talent at the top, talent, you know, across the board, we had, you know, running backs getting picked in the fourth and fifth round that I think are starting caliber players that, you know, in any other year may have been, you know, high second round picks. So it was a very, very deep class and a very talented class, and I still thought that Dalvin Cook was the best of the bunch, the most complete, you know, the most reliable and explosive, the most versatile. He and Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey were real close together. I was real high on Kareem Hunt as well. But Cook, you know, 40 times be damned. When the pads are on and he's playing football, he's just so explosive, and we've already seen that from him in a couple games for Minnesota. He wasted no time, you know, becoming the replacement for Adrian Peterson. He's a three-down back that can make plays as a runner and a receiver, and you saw that so much at Florida State. I thought so much of him as a prospect. That being said, I don't have a problem with the fact that the Bucks did not pick him, particularly at 19, because O.J. Howard, who in my opinion was a top five player in this draft, and I've said this before, may have been the most complete prospect in the entire draft, period. Myles Garrett included, because when you take into account injury history and character and his talent as a prospect and his you know, well-rounded skill set, you kind of check off every box. There was nothing with O.J. Howard that gave me any pause whatsoever. Even people, you know, would point to his lack of production. You know, Julio Jones didn't have a whole lot of production at Alabama because they just don't use their receivers in that type of way. Then he goes to Atlanta, and, you know, the athleticism that he has is fully maximized. I think we're going to see a similar situation with O.J. Howard, where he developed as a blocker so well because of that offense at Alabama. All that did was make him a more complete player. Now that he's in the NFL, you're going to have a team that's going to maximize his athleticism as a receiver, and he's just going to, you know, go to completely new heights. So the fact that the Bucks got a top five player at number 19 made it a no-brainer for me. I really like Dalvin Cook, and there is a need at running back, and they almost ended up with a chance at him in the second round. So, I have no problem with the pick that they made. I think that if Dalvin rips off a couple of big runs, you know, or has a big night or a big day on Sunday against the Bucks, I'm sure we'll see all kinds of people on social media ripping them and freaking out, especially if OJ only has a catch or two. You know, they'll wonder about it. But long-term, I just think it was a no-brainer pick for the Bucks to prefer Howard at that point. If Cook would have made it to them in the second round, I think they would have strongly considered that. But, you know, you'll see a bunch of people freak out about it on Sunday for sure, but I think the Bucks made the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't. It will play out one way or the other. If they shut him down, then some people will be quiet. But draft is one of those things, and you live in that world, where it's always like right now people are talking about how great the person they thought was great in the offseason was because they've got one or two games under their belt and look great. We haven't seen what they look like after 16 games yet, right? So it's always tough at the beginning of the year. But with respect to our young players, you just spoke about O.J. Howard. Let's talk about someone who didn't look particularly great this week against the Bears. Looked a little bit less than I thought he would coming in. Was Chris Godwin? What did you see out of Godwin? If you saw anything enough to grade him on, and do you think that we're just seeing him coming up to speed slowly and everything will be fine?
Yeah, I think that's all it is. I think you're seeing a receiver who is very athletic, has a lot of physical tools, but is showing signs of, you know, trying to process his first NFL playbook and his first NFL game. So, you know, he saw an opportunity maybe for a touchdown catch there in the red zone that, you know, went over his head. He wasn't quite ready for it. That's just a timing issue. You're talking about a quarterback who's in his third year, who's used to a certain set of receivers and certain timing. You know, even after a training camp and a preseason and all these things, there's a lot of bodies. There's a lot of, you know, only so many reps to go around between a particular quarterback and a particular receiver. So I'm not that concerned about it. I thought Godwin was a fantastic pick and a huge steal. So I think, again, similar to what we said about OJ, I think long-term it's going to be, you know, a great, great pick. I'm not ready after one game because we saw some things that maybe looked a little off. I'm not concerned about that whatsoever.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Vikings. Put on your Karnak hat. You're probably too young to know Karnak. Johnny Carson reference. Predict the future. What do you see going into Minnesota this week? What are we going to see out of our Buccaneers? And what are you excited to see?
I'm excited to see the defense get more complex and take advantage of whatever the quarterback situation looks like in Minnesota. You're either going to have a less than full strength Sam Bradford. You're going to have Case Keenum, who, again, the Bucs don't necessarily have the greatest track record of stopping, unfortunately.
That's the great Case Keenum.
Think on paper that would what's that?
That's the great Case Keenum.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it seems to be that way when he plays against Tampa Bay. But, you know, I think that obviously to combat that, the Vikings are going to want to run the ball as much as possible. So you'll hopefully see a lot of those, you know, run blitzes and doing what they can to confuse, you know, the Vikings with alignments and force them into the same mistakes that Mike Glennon, you know, dealt with early in the game that kind of set the tone. And then on offense, you know, the same things you always have to do to take an opposing crowd out of the game. You have to sustain drives. You've got to be able to run the ball. And you can't turn the ball over. I know it's simple stuff, and it sounds like, you know, it may sound boring. But when you're at home, it's important. But when you're on the road and the crowd can be such a factor, especially in a place like Minnesota where you're indoors, you've got to keep them out of the game by doing those fundamental things. You turn the ball over. You give them those big plays. They're going to feed off of that, the fans and the team the same. So, you know, Jameis Winston has got to, you know, be careful about the decisions he makes with the football. The Bucs have got to be able up front to push around that defensive line. They cannot end up in those consistent third down and long situations because, you know, the pass rushers that Minnesota has are absolutely fantastic. They've got athletic linebackers that can cover a lot of space. Xavier Rhodes, one of the better corners in the league. Harrison Smith can cover a lot of ground at safety. They have a lot of playmakers on defense that can make those big plays and take the ball away, get the big sack. The Bucs have got to sustain drives, keep themselves in third and short, and force the Vikings into a situation where they can't rely on Dalvin Cook in the running game. They've got to lean back and throw the ball, and then we'll see Mike Smith dial up those blitzes and hopefully get some big plays.
You know, it's interesting. I went back and watched the better part of both of the first two games, and I expected to come away a lot more impressed with Minnesota, and I don't know if you notice this when you watch Minnesota's defense. I'm not going to talk about their offense because I don't know what offense we'll see. They've got talent, no doubt. Who's going to throw the ball? I don't know. And someone in the chat room just said, when did Sam Bradford become, you know, Dan Marino? Everyone's worried about him being in the game, but he had a good game. He has the ability to throw the ball around. He's probably a better quarterback than Case Keenum, but as you've mentioned, Case Keenum's got a pretty damn good record against us. Everyone who plays quarterback in the NFL is pretty damn good at throwing the ball. Let's just not pretend differently. But on defense, this team looked to be what I would call a counterpuncher. Like when I watched the tape, even Griffin, who's an outstanding end, I didn't see aggression. And I don't mean that as like they're playing soft. They seem to try and decipher and then react. And so everything looked slow. And so when I was watching the tape, I didn't come away being afraid of this defense, but I know they have talent. What am I missing?
I wish I could say that I had a great answer for that. I haven't watched them too closely, but you look on paper and you say this team should be able to set the tone, should be able to get off the after the opposing passer, should be able to pin their ears back and use their explosiveness off the edge to create havoc. And if that's not happening yet this year, maybe it's a matter of first couple game jitters or whatever. But
right.
I think at home in front of that crowd against a team in Tampa Bay who's got a ton of buzz about them, everybody's going to be picking the Bucks probably to go in there and have a good day. With the offense that they have, I think they're going to be jacked up for that game, and I think they're going to want to get after Jameis Winston. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how different their defense may look compared to what you may have seen in the last couple of weeks.
That's a great point about the emotional side. Also playing on turf, right? It's a faster surface. I love Coach's comment about the weather will be perfect. It'll be 72 degrees, right?
Right.
Which I always love about domes, except for I hate it because I think you should play outside. But regardless, I think you're right. I mean, they're going to be amped up, and our young team is going to have to do the same thing, except for they're going to calm down, right? They're coming off of a big win. They've got all this excitement. They've got to come out there and try and control things. Now, I've been talking to Luke Easterling this whole time. Luke, tell people how they can find you, where they can get your content. I love having you on. Like I said, we're going to have you out here live one night. It would be great. But tell them about how to find your stuff and what you're finding interesting right now, even if it's not Bucks related.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter easy at Luke Easterling. You can find all my draft work at draftwire.usatoday.com. You can also find we at USA Today Sports Media. We have a wire site for every sport, for every team in the NFL. So we have Bucks Wire, which Bonnie Mott, the editor there, does a fantastic job staying up on all the Bucks news. So definitely check them out as well if you're interested in Bucks stuff. But at DraftWire, we're headlong into, I've already done a couple of two-round mock drafts, and we've got rankings. And basically, we spend the whole week focusing on both the rookie class in the NFL and what they're doing, who's injured, who made big plays, who's looking good, who's not. But also, the upcoming prospects, anybody who's eligible for the 2018 draft, we're already, knee-deep in that coverage and working on prospect reports and highlights and putting together our rankings and basically what anybody should be looking for next year's draft class. So you can get it all there at DraftWire, whether it's pro, college, whatever you want.
Well, I really appreciate you calling in tonight, Luke. And like I said, we'll work offline to get you in here for a roundtable. We'll try and grab Fish and Slick Rick Brown and have a good time back there. All right.
Hey, I will make that happen. If it happens, I'll be there.
All right. Thanks again, Luke. You take care, brother.
You too, Derek. Thanks so much, man.
Yep. Bye. Luke Easterling, ladies and gentlemen, love having him on here. Always try and be respectful of folks' time when we have them call in. That's why I try and lure them out to Studio 76 so that I can occupy their entire evening and then force them to enjoy beverages. Now, what was asked in the chat room by Cash was, is anyone else concerned about Griffin going against Donovan Smith? Donovan Smith graded out very poorly on PFF this week, as he is has from time to time. Now, I am not one of the Donovan Smith bashers. I think Donovan Smith has all of the physical skills in the world. I definitely think he misses plays. It's usually been about clock for me. I see the same thing happening now. He does not continue through plays. But this offensive staff, Coach Hopp, is not stupid. He knows who Donovan Smith is going to be facing. What you see a lot more of is having Howard or any tight end help. You see a lot more chip blocks, which Steve White and I cried for the last 10-plus years. You're seeing a lot more assistance. They're not just being pigheaded and saying, okay, well, left tackle, just do your damn job or else Winston dies. So while I think a lot of times the focus is, oh, well, what about this player versus this player? Because you see the matchups all the time. And certainly matchups are important. You got to realize that there's team blocking going on up there. It's not usually just a hat on a hat. Now, it can be from time to time. But... interesting. Nick in the chat room says he believes in Warhop as much as he does Mike Smith, which is a pretty damn solid endorsement, I think. And to be honest, I wasn't a Hop fan years ago, but I've become very impressed. I spoke to Ali Marpet about Hop for a while. Ali gave me some really good feedback about how good he was. It's very interesting to see how that's going. Brent Allen live in the chat room, my man from Pewtercast, says the Bears would often throw two guys at Smith, making him choose one to block. Wouldn't often get help from the other guy. This is a matter of film. You keep getting this film. And I agree, Nick. Nick, you sound familiar. You're not my man Cadillac, are you, or whatever the hell his name was? Shit, I don't know. This may be a new pseudonym, unless you're new, truly new. But the talent we have on this line, the talent we have beside the line, one of the things I was going nuts about during the Bears game is there was a point where we were going to spread, which I, again, have been clamoring for the better part of a decade. And the Buccaneers against the Bears, who are a good defense, a non-trivial defense, especially on the pressure side, were able to hold up with five blockers and a back. Now, I will tell you, I told you on Twitter, I'll tell you every week, if this team can block with that set, it's going to be a good year for us Bucs fans. Jose Sanchez says, one penalty, I'm still pinching myself. I know. We haven't even talked about that. So let's wrap up the Bears discussion briefly. We're at 9:39. Let's wrap up the Bears discussion. I think that the highlights for me were the ability, when you can get ahead, right? When you can get ahead by two scores, all of a sudden Mike Smith's job becomes a whole lot easier. Schlereth. I can't say Schlereth. Damn it. That's terrible. Cliches. And what's funny is I like Schlereth, but I don't know enough of his cliches. But it's a good point. He does a good job. When you go up those two scores, though, Mike Smith, his playbook becomes very different, more aggressive, and that's something that I think bodes well for us. Now, every team wants to get in that position. It starts with patience. I know that's not fun. I know that's not exciting, but that's really where it starts. You have to make teams one-dimensional. This game, when you break it down, becomes like that. So when I watch Dalvin Cook run, another patient runner, he runs hard, he runs aggressively, he sees the hole, he's got good vision, he doesn't go down easily on first contact. These are all things that good backs do, guys. I appreciate what Luke said, that you know he had no problem replacing Adrian Peterson. Listen, it's going to take 3 years before I say he replaced Adrian Peterson. Right now he's had two good games, or one really good game and one average game. He's a good back. He does everything well. Guess what? We'll face another 16 of them this year. Quan was not back in practice. Let me give you guys the injury report quickly. Injury report as of today from Buccaneers.com. Quan did not participate on Thursday. Neither did Chris Baker, listed as an illness. Devontae Bond was back full participation with his knee. Brent and Gerald were both limited participation, and Jack Smith did not participate, also listed as an illness. The Pewter Report folks did tweet out that Gerald, limited participation was probably a little bit conservative. He was dancing around and said he was fine. I get a feeling we're okay injury-wise. I don't think the Chris Baker thing is a big deal. I thought Chris did a good job. A lot of people are taking him apart, too. He did his damn job. So, but when I talk about Dalvin Cook, this defense is going to have to try and shut him down, make Case Keenum convert first downs, and get the offense a chance to get the lead. Now, let me review one more thing with the Bears, and we'll go all Vikings all the time. The predictive MVPs I did were sort of boring. I had Jameis Winston on offense and Gerald McCoy on defense, and while I think a good argument could be made for someone other than Gerald, I think I can make a good one that it was Gerald. Jameis had a good game, but not great game. I had 27-13 Bucks, so I wasn't off by much, but again, never bet based on my predictions because it's just terrible. Brandon says that Cook is that good now because there's no pro tape, and it's probably not a bad thing. Everyone shows their tendencies, but it's, you know, the fundamentals are there. JC Delatorre's latest pet peeve says experts who say, well, you know, Jameis has a tendency to turn it over. So we've talked about this kind of shit before. National guys are at a disadvantage to us. We watch this team constantly. Defensive player of the game for Derek was Beckwith, and I think that's a great call. Beckwith shut down an entire drive late in the game. I thought he looked phenomenal. And no, I'm not blowing. I'm just saying he played good football. But the national guys are at a disadvantage. When you think about the time that we spend, you know, JC, myself, Brent, guys that do podcasts around here who have to take time out of their life to go watch games, it's hard to have enough time to watch all 22 of multiple instances of a team you play and try and get patterns and tendencies. Now, if you're watching that team all year long, listen, I'll put my knowledge of the Buccaneers up against anyone's. But I sure as hell won't put my knowledge of the Vikings against anyone. Brent Allen had Levante David, who had a great game. You guys already know how I feel about Levante. But I think that you should definitely go back and watch what Gerald McCoy does to teams. And I bet if you got a chance to talk to the coaching staff of Chicago, they would tell you how often Gerald McCoy blew plays up. Yeah, the Mike Evans call was as big a stretch as my Jameis Winston stretch, but you got it right that time. Unfortunately, he had Jameis throwing the ball to him. But yeah, I mean, I agree. What's up, JJ? All right, let's train our guns, or let's do skulls and swords. Skulls and swords from last game. You guys drop them in the chat room. You guys know the rule. One skull and one sword. The skull is the bad one. He's the bonehead of the game. The sword is the good one. I am actually going to give, as my man says here, Brent Allen, Levante David is going to get my sword for this game. And the skull has to go to Charles Sims. Right, and I'm not going to continue to beat up Charles Sims all night. You guys know what I think about Charles Sims. You know what I thought about Charles Sims in training camp. I know the coaching staff doesn't agree with me, and they know a whole lot more than me. But I'll tell you what, man, I get the mismatch. And Jesus Christ, when you saw him, every time they split him wide, man, I'll tell you. And I think they can do it with anyone. I think any one of our backs can do this. I think he does it better than the others. I think he's a better receiver than any of our other backs, without a doubt. But when they split him out wide and force the cornerback to adjust and then have a linebacker or a safety roll down to stand on Mike Evans, the play is over, guys. It is absolutely over. Is that worth what the rest of the shit is he brings? And I just don't know. They say he plays a ton of special team snaps. I'd have to check Greg Aumann's counts because he is a genius when it comes to that stuff. Jason's giving the skull to Donovan Smith. Wow. Interesting. Interesting call. Over Sims. It's an interesting call. I like it. But offensively, what I was just talking about, I think Peyton Barber can go out there. I think Jacquizz Rodgers can go out there. I definitely think Doug Martin can go out there. I just don't think it's quite as dangerous as it is with Chuck Sims. Now, one of the things we did see is, and Luke talked about it a little bit, with accuracy, Jameis is having to get used to the speed that DeSean Jackson has. Now, you saw him miss him twice. One time he was getting hit. The other time he just missed him. Better to overthrow DeSean because you don't want him trying to fight for 50-50 balls back there necessarily, unlike Mike Evans. But when you have someone who's that damn fast, sometimes it's tough to adjust how you throw to one player over another. Now, that's his job. I'm not giving him a get-out-of-jail-free card, guys. Don't get it wrong. But it is going to take some time. Shucker, what do you love about Sims? What I love about Sims, there's only one thing that I love about Sims, is Sims is a receiver. The problem is he's not a top five receiver on this team. He's just the best receiving running back we have. So if you put him out there, if you flex him out of the backfield to the X or over to the Z, what the defense has to do is their cornerback typically has to adjust out and take that outside guy. And what that means is a linebacker has to go over your slot or a safety has to come down typically. This creates a mismatch no team wants to face. So if you're watching it on film or if you're watching it live, if they flex the back out, especially if it's 34, watch what the cornerback does and then watch who comes over. Oh, Buckboy say he loves Sims. Okay, my bad. Shug. So I think that, you know, when we look at the things we said we have to see, and we got like sort of this, I'm going to do like a report card that we'll keep going throughout the year, I think. I think that'll be fun. For Jameis, it was better reads, improved accuracy, deep balls, and reduced turnovers. Three of those I think he did a great job of. I think his accuracy was pretty damn good. He threw a couple of dimes in the game. The deep ball just still isn't there, and it's never been there for us. It has to get there. It has to become a thing. If he hits two of those damn things, that tape scares the shit out of the next team, without a doubt. Now, on the running back job, and I've tweeted out or I retweeted Joe Thomas talking about rushing efficiency. So if you didn't see that tweet that I put out earlier, or you lost it in amidst the 14 trillion boy band title back and forth with me and Pinnacle and Thomas and Chris, make sure you go out there and check out Joe Thomas talking about running back efficiency, because he said something I've said for years, and he's right, I'm wrong. He said people look at it and say 4 yards a carry and that's what you want. But he talks about the problem with that model, which is if you rush for 1 yard, then 2 yards, then negative 4 yards, then 2 yards, then 6 yards, then negative 6 yards, and then a 60-yard run, you can look at that and think you're very, very efficient. But the reality is you can't call the game that way. It's not predictable. So what he says, you have to look at rushing efficiency, which is either on the run, you get a first down, you get a touchdown, or you get 4 yards a carry. Now, I don't know where that data is stored. If you do, let me know, because he is absolutely right. That ratio becomes very powerful, and I'd love to go back and look at backs across the NFL to see what that holds true. But for us, we were at 3.4 yards a carry. I thought that they picked up blitzes relatively effectively throughout the game, and they provided a good safety net for Jameis throughout the game as well. On the wide receiver position, Mike Evans is just a beast. DeSean Jackson can get open anytime he wants to. The weapons are there. If health maintains, we don't even get to talk about Adam Humphries. They tried to go to the linebackers early in the game, or the tight ends rather, got a little scared, but they're still both deadly. Cambrake came on late, had a good game, I thought. And you're right, Rick. Barry Sanders absolutely did that. Minus one, two, minus one, then 85 yards and broke John Lynch's ankles in every highlight. But on the offensive side of the ball, I just think that the rule is the same. You guys are all right. We got to protect against this pass rush. I think we have to see what it looks like first. I think the offensive line is gaining some confidence. J.R. Sweezy didn't grade out well, but I thought he played well. I thought Ali Marpet played great at center. I think that Damar Dotson showed the kind of player that got him the contract he has. So that's one side. You had Pamphil and Evan Smith rotating intentionally. And then you got Donovan Smith. So the combination of that line is going to have to continue to try and impose their will. They're going to get some pretty damn good front seven this week. Their linebackers are fast too, guys. They can't lose sight of that. We're talking a lot about the front four, but the Minnesota Vikings linebackers are non-trivial. So on the offensive side of the ball, you're going to have to move the ball down the field. But as Todd Monken said in his press conference, and as everyone who looks at the stats and watches the game knows, what this team has to do beyond the basics, be brilliant in the basics, is they've got to learn how the fuck to get the ball into the end zone when they're in the red zone. They have all the weapons in the world, and they have to do it. They have to be able to do it religiously. Now, when I watched Pittsburgh against the Minnesota Vikings, again, I just wasn't impressed. Now, Pittsburgh's a really good team. I get that. But I was not impressed with the way these Vikings come off the ball. And if you can't come off the ball in the red zone, I don't think you're that good a defense. Now, they could come out this week and beat the living shit out of us and make me look like a moron. But what I saw was, the analogy I used with Luke, was they counterpunch. It's almost like they start with a false step. So, from a Bucs fan perspective, what I'm hoping to see this week is them come out and punch these guys in the mouth. If you can impose your will a little bit, then all of a sudden the passing game that is so potent becomes even more dangerous because they have to start committing more people to the box. With OJ and Brake, why do we always throw the fade to Evans? The fade to Evans is the highest percentage red zone play that we have, without a doubt. He's a freakish athlete. It should be there. He's going to be able to get over any one of these corners. Now, in my mind, and I like OJ and Brake, and I have no issue with them. I know that we seem to love tight end of the post in the red zone. I'm not a huge fan of tight end of the post, depending on what the safety positions are, because I think it's where most of the players are. I like to throw where people aren't. I'm just kind of traditional that way. But I also like to motion people in the red zone because I want people to declare. So if you're going to come out in man, and if you're going to come out, or if you're going to come out in press, guess what? If you come out and press man, and I've got Mike Evans on the wide side of the field, I'm getting everyone the hell away from that side because I want him to have an option. And that's what you have to do when you have a quarterback like Jameis and Mike together. They've got to get to the point where they're on the same page, where he looks over and can tell either from what he sees or what Mike shows him, based on the cornerback position, whether he's going to the fade or the slant. It really is that simple in the red zone. Now, if you have to, then you mix things up. But to me, this team has enough talent that they should be able to impose their will in the red zone. But I hope that that explanation makes sense on Evans. Right? He's got such a physical advantage over most corners in the league. If the corner decides to play him inside, the fade should be there. If the corner plays him outside, the slant is there. He has to play him head up. He has no choice. And then Mike has to make the decision quickly. I agree, Nick's point about Mike coming across the back of the end zone, because he never gives up on plays. These guys don't give up on plays. James is going to try and make the throw. That throw to Mike Evans was just a little bit high, but that should have been a touchdown. Mike did the right thing. James did the right thing, just too high. An accuracy issue. Now, what's interesting, Nick says they'll fake the fade and come back to the inside. There's almost not enough time in the red zone to do that, in my opinion. I'm not a huge fan of double moves in the red zone. I think decisiveness wins in the red zone, but I know your point. You can give a feint and then cut across. But when you look at that route, the way you describe it is the receiver's got to get across the face of the cornerback. So if the cornerback's going to try and jam him, which is what he should do, he's going to try and get right into his tits and get into his shoulder pads to try and disrupt the timing, because a fade is a timing route. But if he goes to jam him and it's not going to the fade. Mike's got to rip through there, get across his face, and give Jameis his chest as a target. And then it's just easy pickings. But at any rate, it's going to be fun to watch. On the defensive side of the ball, opportunistic. We talked about this in training camp. We talked about it in the offseason. Mike Smith does not give a shit, folks. He is going to go after the jugular. He is always going to do it. Now, he's got his defense playing good. They've got to play that same level of discipline, but they've got to take those chances. And I'll tell you what, I like him. I have no issue. And that's why I was fascinated by people being so worried about giving up 300 yards on the ground or on in the air. I don't care. I don't give a shit if every quarterback throws for 300 yards against us. If they don't get more than one touchdown, we should win every game. Focus on the important shit, folks. Jason says it well. Without Cook, it looks like the Vikings have a problem. Now, they have talented receivers. I know my man Fish loves Thielen. They've got guys to catch ball. They're not going to have six drops like the Bears had. That's just not going to happen. If Keenum or Bradford or Dalvin Cook or whoever the hell throws the football can get the ball to these receivers, they're going to catch it. But our defense is starting to brand itself as disruptors. We talked about it during camp. They are constantly trying to create turnovers. Rick brings up a good point. Quite often you give up yards like that when you're ahead because the people just, you're playing soft. So, Callum's right. It's the same game plan, and it'll be the same game plan damn near every week. You want to make a team one-dimensional. Now, what the next level of evolution will be is if you can do that, if you can force them to get into that situation where they have to throw the ball, either because you've gotten turnovers and you've gotten a lead or they become ineffective in the run game, you've got to convert those pressures into sacks. Coach Cutter said it well. He said that their target is a sack every 14 pass attempts. And they were way behind. But they got tons of pressures. And I thought about Sapp's book where he called, he said that Chidi Ahanotu should have renamed his restaurant Pressures instead of Sacks. I don't really care. I want the pressure. Sacks are fun. Sacks are incredibly disruptive, right? But I'll take pressure that leads to a pick for sure. I want us there. You've got to be there to get the sack. Now, you guys talked about Noah Spence earlier. I love what I saw out of Noah Spence. I love what I see out of him standing. I love what I see out of him in a sprinter stance. He's got to develop more than an outside move. But the outside move is so good, it still works, even though people know it's coming. Especially with quarterbacks that hate to be hit, i.e. Glennon. Now, I don't think any quarterback really likes to be hit, but you look at a guy like Big Ben. Big Ben's a big dude. He doesn't really give a shit. He knows he's going to get hit. I think that it comes down to how you hit quarterbacks. And maybe that's because I'm old and I may be a little bit dirty when it comes to coaching. But if you get a chance to hit a quarterback, you hit him hard. I'm not saying cheat. I'm not saying be dirty. I don't want you to do anything horrible. These guys have kids to feed. But damn it, hit him hard. You get a chance to take a shot, you take your shot and make him look over his shoulder. That was the nice thing is, even if you're not getting there, if you're causing him all that pressure, he starts to feel phantom pressure. And you're right, Nick, I get hit everyone hard. But what I'm saying is, I think sometimes the quarterback is such a protected position that the players have been taught not to do that. I'd rather take a 15-yard penalty for unnecessary roughness early in the game, but make sure the quarterback knows damn well he's going to get hit all day long. Again, I'm not advocating dirty play. I'm not saying, lead with the crown of the helmet or hit him in the head or go to his knees. None of that shit. That's not how I like the game. But I want that quarterback to know those dogs are coming every damn down. And once you start to unleash those linebackers coming, it starts to get fun. Yes, absolutely set the tone. It's funny, back in the day, Brandon, I used to be that guy. My dad was a dirty coach, I think. If I'm taking a unnecessary roughness or, roughing the passer penalty, you can bet your ass it's going to be on the first series. It's going to be on the first series. May never do it again. But I'm going to tell you what, old boy's going to be looking. I agree with the two strikes deal. You're right. That's why I say I've toned it down, Rick. In my older age, I've hit the brakes a little bit. Bounty gate. Yeah, like I said, I'm not that guy. I'm not saying, okay, we'll go do that. But I'm just saying, you got to make sure he understands where they come from. And I do think that as the year progresses, as we start getting more burn, we start seeing more film, Will Golston, Robert Ayers. Listen, Robert Ayers played a damn good game. These guys are able to spell each other and play good football. All right, let's talk about some of the things we'll talk about going into the Vikings game. We talked about it before. Keys to the game: control Dalvin Cook, make Minnesota one-dimensional. That's not rocket surgery, as they say. Convert in the red zone. Everyone knows that. They've got to get to the point where this is a team that scores touchdowns, not field goals, though. Congratulations for us not dicking that up repeatedly. And then because I was in such a good mood, I went with Karate Kid, and it's strike first, strike hard, no mercy, sir. Get a 2-score lead and let this defense eat. And I know it's like, oh, well, who the hell wouldn't want that? That has to be your mantra. Jump down these guys and let your defense eat. No, I wouldn't say that, Nick. You know that. I would never do that. I know. They've got talent everywhere. I watched probably I'd say half of the Saints game, and I'd say 3/4 of the Steelers game, and I just didn't come away overly impressed. They have talent and skill positions for sure. But there are times where I watch teams that we have to play where I'm like, fuck, these guys are really good. I don't come away from looking at the Vikings thinking that. And I expected to, and I think that might have been the problem. Make his knuckles bleed. Did you just do Karate Kid 3? Oh my God, Derek, well done. Well done. Bucks have a history of struggling against good tight ends. The Bucks have a history of struggling against damn near anything if you look for it hard enough. I think that this linebacking core and these safeties are doing better. By the way, TJ Ward did look good when he was in there. I think he brings a great energy. I think that you continue to see that depth at each of the levels. So, all right, we did our keys to the game. Let's do a predictive MVPs. Drop your predictive MVPs in the chat room. I will tell you mine. I'm going to go a little bit off script on the offensive side, assume, because his wife hasn't told us otherwise at this point. Jacquizz Rodgers probably feels better this week. And I think Jacquizz Rodgers reminds people why he's the starting back. Now, you guys all know I'm a Doug Martin guy. When Doug Martin comes back, I think he's the starting running back. That's not because I don't like Jacquizz Rodgers, because I do. But I think Jacquizz Rodgers is a really good runner of the football. I think this offensive line can play good football. I think Rodgers has a big game. I see Callum is on board with that. We see a lot of O.J. Howard. Nick is going with Donovan Smith for the offensive MVP. I like the balls this Nick guy has. I like it. On defense, I'm going with Levante David. I'm telling you, Levante David is going to make a case for defensive MVP this year. I think he is out to prove something, and I don't know why he thinks he has to, but I don't care. We got some D-Jacks by Brandon, TJ Ward on defense by Sloan, O.J. Howard, Donovan Smith, O.J. Howard, MVP Rodgers by Callum, defense TJ Ward, Brent Grimes on defense by J.C. De La Torre, J.J. cheating and doing Evans or Rodgers. Just pick one, man. It's just a guess. It's all good. McCoy on D by J.J. It's with the interior of that line, McCoy is not a bad choice, guys. You know, I mean, he could definitely eat this week. Could definitely eat. Let's go with our score prediction. This week, our mighty Buccaneers travel to Minnesota. They'll see my boy Sid Davey, 100% cheese-free. We got a bunch of Bucs fans going up there, having a good time. My man Trey, Diggs Garzo. They got some great fans up there. I'm really, really salty that I'm not going to this game. Offense, Chuck Sims, says Chris Oxentine. You're killing me, Smalls. Chris Conti, Brent Allen. Oh, I love it. I love it. Oversell Podcast, Derek says 27-21 Bucks, a close game. Nick says 35-18 Bucks. I agree, J.J. Baker's critical. 24-13 by J.C. De La Torre. 20-17 by Callum. 21-10 Vikings by Sloan. Ooh. Kevin, what are you doing to me, brother? Rick H., Joe Dirt. I'm assuming your reference is to the player, but I don't know why. I must have lost the thread. I apologize. JJ goes 24-16 Bucks. Listen, I'm going to go monkey style and say I'm a believer. I've been a believer before and been fooled. But I'm a believer in this team. I think that this team wins. I think they win going away. I think they do learn how to score in the red zone. I think it is a 31-16 victory. 31-16 victory. And no, I haven't done all the permutations of how they get to 31, but I know they can, so shut up. I don't think it's going to be ugly. I really don't, Cash. I think this team will get better. They've gotten a week of film. I don't think this is the same team that can go and read their press clippings and come out and play like shit. I 32-27. I like it, Jose. You guys have been with me for, many of you have been with me for a long time, right? 12 years doing this shit. I don't think I've ever been this excited about what I saw on the field and what I see coming out of the coaching staff and how it gets translated back to the field. They have all of the groceries in the pantry. They've got a hell of a cook. Now they've got to put it on the table. And I think that this is, you know, coach coming in the locker room, next game. Rick, I agree. Rick, and Rick, you're one of those guys, right? You've been around for a long time. Someone write it down. I said that. Said what? 4 sacks for GMC this week. I like it. Good. Very few things would make me happier than that with all the shit this poor guy has taken over the years. I think this team is for real, guys. I really do. Now, they have to go out and prove it. Now, I don't like going too far down the road. 28-3 in the first half. I like it. If they do get the win, let's say they get the win over Minnesota, they're coming back to play a Giants team that I said before is not very good. Everyone else was talking about how good the Giants were. I said they're not very good. They've looked very not good. They have a chance to be 3-0 coming in against the Patriots, which will be a great test. And a great test if you're 3-0, because if you lose, you're still 3-1, and you learn a shit ton about yourself. But if you win, what does that do? I'm going to tell you this right now, guys. I think the Bucs go, and they win convincingly in Minnesota. I'm going to be down in Sarasota. The Stick Carriers are having a watch party down at Buffalo Wild Wings. I'll be joining them. They joined us at the tailgate. It's the least I can do. Had a great time with our new friends. Had a great time with our old friends at a tailgate that was spectacular. I think that for our next home game against the Giants, which is a late game, we will be tailgating as we always do at 3316 West Ohio. We will be even larger this time than we were for the first game. And I agree, Nick. It makes Thursday night absolutely batshit crazy. The Giants could be a trap game. Brett, you're right. You're a voice of reason, sir. You are the voice of reason. Trap games don't exist for great teams. So the question becomes, if they do get the wins, if they do get the second win of the Vikings, can they overcome traps? You're right. Thank you, JJ, for you guys that are traveling. I know Princess Nikki's got a Buckaholics get-together up in Minnesota. We want to see lots of pictures for you Bucks fans out there repping everywhere. There's Buccaneer pride going everywhere, and I love it, and I'm glad to see it. It's good to see. It's great to feel. I can't tell you what it would be like to have a 6-2 record 8 games into this year. The get-together is the Buffalo Wild Wings at Mall of America. So I am booked for New Orleans. I will see you there. My New Orleans trip is booked. I get in Thursday. I leave Monday. I'm at the Astor Crown Plaza. I will be organizing a get-together for the folks from Buck Fan Tours. And we'll be getting together every night on Bourbon. I am booking my Buffalo trip tomorrow. I am booking my Packers trip Saturday. So if you guys are going to those games, let people know, man. It's great to get together with other Bucks fans. So if you're here in Florida, I'll see you down in Sarasota if you can. Yeah, I agree, Rick. That's the thing. Invite people on. We need people on the bandwagon. Look at how many people. There's like 16 people at the San Francisco game. Nick, book it, man. If you haven't been to Green Bay, get your ass to Green Bay. It is religious for a football fan. I promise you. I've been before. I will go every time we play. I know what you meant. So, still the best show. I don't know what you mean, but I think it's a compliment. I know, money, brother. I feel you. I don't mean, and I never mean to say that and speak light of that to folks, guys. I want to make sure I go on record as saying that because I know I say shit like that all the time. This is an expensive hobby we have. It is an expensive-ass hobby. Just to go to home games, even here in Tampa. I get it. I totally do. I am telling you, if you've not been to Green Bay, you'll have a few opportunities to do it. Comes around. Sell a kidney. I hear two ticks to one Packers game is about the same as season tickets. No, that's bullshit. Listen, I'm going to go ahead and dispel a bunch of fucking rumors. You can get tickets to every game everywhere if you can spend $200 a seat. That is not a season ticket fee. You can get games tickets way cheaper than that if you'll wait till the game starts or if you don't mind sitting in the top. Right, if you're a dick like me and you want to sit in either club or lower level, closer to the 50, you'll spend $200, $250 a seat. Right? Well, thank you, Chuck. I appreciate the kind words. But, Nick, I feel you, dude. I didn't take it as you taking it that way, but I do know that I'm a little bit cavalier with my language about go do these things. I know people that go out there and they save their money and they go to these games. I love doing it. It's one of the things I'm fortunate that my life has provided me the opportunity to do. I love going to away games. I love meeting fans out there and getting a chance to know them. And I love the fact that it's spreading. I love that I met so many friends in Arizona, and I love that they took over fucking San Diego. And I love that they're having Rich Prick works. You know, whatever works, man. If you had to sell home games to go, you could do that probably. You could probably sell them for so much money, those stupid Patriot fans. Gee, listen, I was born in Massachusetts, and I'm not going to go too far on this diatribe, guys, because it's not time to pick on the Patriots. But I've been to a game in Gillette. It was shitty. The stadium's beautiful, and the mall out there is gorgeous, but the fans were assholes. I was born in Dorchester. Actually, I was born in Stoughton. My mom lived in Dorchester. I grew up in Sharon for a few months, right? The fans are terrible. If they're going to spend that much money and you can sell your tickets and buy cheaper tickets and still go to the game, do that. Do it. Let those assholes sit down there, or the massholes as they're called. We always have Patriots fans even when they're not playing. And Chuck, I feel you on that. And listen, other than football, by the way, I don't follow. But I went to Fenway when I was there with my man Rick. We had a great time. I met some nice folks. I loved going to Boston. I enjoyed the city, but I did have a less than stellar experience in the stands. It was nowhere near as shitty as Seattle, by the way, where I lived for 7 years, but it was shitty. All I'm saying is, guys, this is a really, really unique opportunity, I think. Now, I could come off looking like a jackass. We could go to Minnesota and get a mud hole stomped in our ass, and all of a sudden we think, oh, no, blow it all up again. Who knows? That's the beauty of this thing, right? But right now, what I've seen, what I feel, and what I sense is that this could be a pretty special year, guys. That doesn't mean we're going to go, oh, Super Bowl! But every game, I think we have a really legitimate chance of winning and winning convincingly. And for every one that you do, you build confidence for the next one. It's the opposite of the damn quicksand we've been talking about for years. So I appreciate you guys tuning into the live show. I appreciate all of the things you guys do to support this podcast. I want to remind you guys about our charitable work. For the next tailgate, it will also be for One Voice and Paul's project. We're lumping those together. We're going to do our pies in the face. It's sort of like the ice bucket challenge. You can buy a pie that you can put in one of the crew members' faces. I don't know what they're going to sell them for, but they'll be for sale. All that money will go to One Voice. We'll have great times. I want to thank our sponsors, Steps Towing, Tito's Vodka, Don Q Rum, Steakhouse Elite, Pepin Distributing. We're having a hell of a time. I want to thank all of the fan groups, Buccaneer Invasion, the Stick Carriers, the Buckaholics, people that are unaffiliated. I don't give a shit what tattoo you have. I just don't care. Just be a Bucks fan. Get out there and have a great time. Nick knows it. He's been going since he was 13, and this is different. Memphis Bucks fans, LLC, whatever the hell, man. Get them all registered, get them out there, and get out there and support these Buccaneers. So I appreciate it. We'll get this podcast up, and we will see you guys after the Vikings game. I will be on, you're 16 now. Come on now. I will see you guys on Twitter. It will be very active, I suspect, during the game. So definitely tweet back at me, and then get ready for that Giants game, and we'll see you there. Go Bucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Scoop. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
We're like bugs running, man, I think that's all, folks. My man O's just shut down another show. Same name, same time for the past 11 years. Guess what, next week we gon' be right here talking about the Bucks and having a good time. We give it to you straight, no need to be between the lines. The beat drop hard every time I hit the nine. And if you didn't know it, this is Franco on the rhymes. Yeah. 11 years strong, y'all. It's the What the Buck podcast. My man Derek, they call him Old School. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck, man. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck.